flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Football season is winding down. We got the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. We got the perfect guy to talk about that Super Bowl with us. Perfect guy to talk to, I think, about the Bobby Slowick firing last week, as he covered a lot of Texans football down the stretch. He is our good friend. He's a host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You can get him on social media at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross Tucker joining us on the program right now. Ross, how you doing?
Awesome. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. Hey, you'll like this. We're getting ready to head to Radio Row on Sunday. We're going to be there all next week. We're looking forward to seeing you there, hopefully. And it's sponsored by Flight by Yingling, and I know you're a huge Yingling person.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So first of all, I didn't realize I was hanging out with you, Sean, that they had Yingling in Houston.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Three quick things on Yingling. Number one, I don't think I'm allowed to say on the air the age at which I started drinking Yingling, but oh, yeah. I've been drinking Yingling for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking age in Pennsylvania was like 15 when you were growing up. You know,
if you started on the high school football team, I think that's correct, actually. Yes. I think if you're in ninth grade and you're on varsity, yeah, I think that is how it works. It's funny because that's like all we drank. That's all the other kids drank in high school and college and stuff. And then what's really funny, you know, I've done the brewery tour. So I'm a big beer guy, big brewery tour connoisseur. I'm sure you guys know this. Obviously, hopefully some of your listeners know this. It's America's oldest brewery. It's 1839.
Yeah, man.
1839. Yeah. Like, so I've been there. You go to these other brewery tours, and they have, like, this incredible like German equipment, and like they're pressing all these buttons. You go to Yingling in Pottsville, Pennsylvania, and they're like, here's the cave. Here's the caves where we store the beer. Like, you're literally underground in these caves. It's absolutely incredible. Highly recommend it. And then my wife has a family propane business right near Yingling. And they supply all of Yuengling's propane, which is why it tastes so delicious. You can you can just taste the propane in the beer, which makes it so delicious.
Like, yeah, a lot of times I'll be drinking a beer and I'm like, what is this coal-powered crap? Yeah. What the hell? No, I need a propane heated.
Can I get a little propane?
They heated these hops with natural gas?
Oh,
no.
My God, that's funny. Ross Tucker with the Yuengling overview there. I love it. All right, so Ross, we'll get to the Super Bowl matchup in a second. But for those of us that do not have a team participating in the Super Bowl, you know, we're doing things like trying to find a new offensive coordinator. So Bobby Slowick fired last Friday. What would you be looking for in a new offensive coordinator first and foremost for the Houston Texans?
It's a really good question. I actually want to take a step back and start with Bobby Slowick. You know, so he did a phenomenal job in 2023. There's a reason why he got all those head coaching interviews. You know, this past year, they did not a lot of times look like a well-coached offense. And I would say in particular, the offensive line. And I didn't really know their offensive line coach. But, you know, we had talked about this a couple times this year on your guys' show. I just saw some things I thought were concerning in terms of, you know, mental errors, technique issues that, you know, they had invested a lot in those guys and they did not get the return on investment. I didn't know if DeMeco would go there, and I didn't know if I thought he should go there with Bobby. I you know, he's there every day, so obviously he knows more than I do. I guess part of me feels like I might have just gone the new O-line coach route as opposed to getting rid of Slowick because, man, they were really explosive in 2023, and there's a lot of good things that Slowick does. They lost their two, you know, how many games did they play where they had all three star receivers?
Like one and a half, like literally one and a half games, something like that, something silly, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know that I would have gone there if I was DeMeco, but he did. And I think what's interesting is, you know, they haven't hired anybody yet. To me, if you're going to do that, you really got to kind of have a pretty good feel, I feel like, for who the next guy is going to be. And maybe, you know, I'm not sitting here following the Houston Texans offensive coordinator, you know, process. So maybe you guys can tell me, you know, who they've interviewed or who they're talking about or whatever. But I don't know. I don't think I would have moved on from Slowick unless I felt really good about who I was going to replace him with. And not that I'm going to break any news here, but the two things that they really need to emphasize would be a coordinator that can make it more offensive line friendly or at least put those guys in a position to have more success, because I think if they do that, I actually think the Stroud success would come with it, the Stroud increase success. But I don't know. I've seen reports that maybe there was tension there. You guys have to tell me. You're there. What was going on? I saw some tweet that, you know, maybe Stroud wanted this, or that Stroud and Slowick weren't on the same page. I don't know. That annoys me a little bit, just in the sense that, man, I felt like Slowick really helped Stroud have up until this year, the best season we'd ever seen.
Yeah, I haven't, like, looking into that, I just, there's nothing that I would, so far there really hasn't been anything, who knows, maybe more stuff will come out later. As far as the guys they've interviewed so far, Jeff Nixon, who was Syracuse's offensive coordinator last year, and Gerard Johnson, who's been in the building the last couple of years as the QB coach, co-QB coach for C.J. Stroud. And so Jeff Nixon has a bunch of experience in the NFL. He's been an offensive coordinator a couple of times, whereas Gerard Johnson's never been in a play-calling situation. I really like Gerard Johnson a lot. I think he could potentially end up being a really good coordinator. I just personally right now, I don't have an appetite for a guy who's never called plays before working with my third-year quarterback under a head coach who's a defensive-minded coach who's still very much involved with the defense and will only be in his third year as a head coach.
I would agree with that. I don't like the idea. Although Slowick hadn't called plays before either, right?
Exactly.
and that worked out very well. But when it's a defensive-minded head coach calling the plays on defense, mm-hmm. then the offensive coordinator has, like, full autonomy. And I don't like the idea of that being an inexperienced guy either. You know, I'd rather bring in someone with some pelts on the wall that, you know, you have confidence that he's done it before. I don't want to go through growing pains with Gerard Johnson, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
we're that's exactly what I had said like half an hour ago with Sean. You hire a guy that's never called plays before, and as you alluded to earlier, it's not just the calling plays, it's coaching the offensive line. You know, it's coaching the wide receivers and coaching those position coaches. There are a lot of moving parts that go into it, and I just got the sense that everything was disjointed. You know, Ross, you can speak to this. I'm sure you were in situations in your career where the O-line coach and the offensive coordinator just did not see eye to eye, and the offensive coordinator is asking the O-line to do stuff that's either impossible or really hard to execute, and vice versa. And I don't know if any of that was going on with the Texans, but that's what it looked like was going on to me, just from the outside looking in.
That's really interesting. And yes, I have been there a bunch. I always have a bias on this, right? I've always thought that there should be more offensive line coaches that become coordinators. My theory is this. If you set up the offense so that the offensive line is successful, the offense is going to be successful. You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine, like, how many times are you going to be like, oh my gosh, he's got 7 seconds to block, to throw, but nobody's open. They need a new, it doesn't happen. Like, if the offensive line is doing well, the offense is going to do well. That's kind of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ross, no, that could never work out for somebody like, say, Andy Reid, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay. Ross Tucker is joining us on the show. Hey, by the way, one quick correction. When I said like a game and a half that those wide receivers, Collins, Dell, and Diggs played together, that, Ross, that number is, I'm throwing Joe Mixon in there as well. Like the four of them only got on the field together literally for less than two games this year. The receivers were not on the field with each other, all three very much either. Maybe four games, five games at the most, just to correct myself on that point. Let's shift gears, Ross, to talk about this Super Bowl matchup. And the thing I'm most curious to ask you about, given your ties to the Eagles, you know, for those who don't know, Ross covers the Eagles games in the calls the Eagles games in the preseason, lives in Pennsylvania. That's the team that's closest to him. It felt like a couple times this year, and really throughout his tenure, like where Nick Sirianni was really under fire. You know, they're 2-2 earlier this year. He's bringing his kids to press conferences after games, and that got people upset. He's yelling at fans. He's having to be pulled away from fans by other Eagles employees on the sidelines. He's got a vibe to him where you're like, how is this guy succeeding? So that's my question. How is this guy succeeding, Ross?
A couple things. Number one, the players love him. And what's so interesting about him, like, giving the business to some of the Titans, to some of the Eagles fans after they beat the Browns after the bye, mm-hmm. is that some of the players actually said to him they felt like he wasn't being himself. They like his energy, his fire, and his passion. And during the bye week, they had said to him, hey, we want the old you. We want the you that gets after people in his fight. He might have taken it a little bit too far, yelling at the Eagles fans. That might have been a little bit more than they were talking about, but they love him. I mean, and there's a lot of different videos you can see, you know, like after the game, N'Kobe Dean couldn't be there because he just had surgery. So they're FaceTiming him from the field. And Sirianni's like, dude, this would not have happened without you. Mm. He's, you know what he is? He's the type of guy that if he's on your team, you love him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's on the other team, you probably kind of hate him. But he's theirs. And he loves them. And, you know, every day when the press conference, he wears a different guy's T-shirt, you know, like for their foundation or whatever. I mean, he just does like a bunch of little things to help prop these guys up. Mailata's talked about when his dad was sick and Sirianni called him like three times and said, hey, if you need to go down to Australia, go for it, and how much that meant. So I think he does a terrific job setting the culture. I think he did a really nice job hiring Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio. And they have the best roster in football, too, which helps a lot, right? I mean, at some point, you have to acknowledge that they have the best players, which gives them a tremendous advantage to have success. I mean, it's at least the second time in the last 3 years that they've had the best players.
Yep. Ross Tucker joining us. All right, Ross, so we're less than 2 weeks away from the Super Bowl. We're less than 3 weeks away from Valentine's Day. And I know that you have the perfect Valentine's Day gift for your significant other out there.
So, not to get too like mushy or sentimental, I just, life is short. Everybody listening has lost somebody. Tell people how you feel about them. You know, tell people how special they are, how much you love them. Flowers are cool. Take them out to dinner, cool. But to actually have a professional writer write a story about your significant other that looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper, it's framed with pictures of her and you and kids if you have them. It's really awesome. And I've decided half the point of giving someone a gift is like the context around it. When you give this to them and they're opening it up and they see this like framed newspaper cover story that they're on, they're always like, what is this? To be able to say, I wanted something special, so I had a story written about you. Sounds incredible. Like, you had a story written about me? Then they want to read it right away. Make sure if you guys do this that you say, I just never thank her enough for all the little things she does. Ooh, because even if your wife doesn't do anything for you, they cry. They all think that they cry at that line. Oh, my gosh, he notices. MyFrontPageStory.com, MyFrontPage. And then they'll have it hanging up in the house forever. So that the gift that keeps on giving, or you get an argument, you just point at it. Did you have a story written about me? No, you didn't. I had a story written about you. MyFrontPageStory.com.
You carry it around on microfiche in your wallet in case you get in a fight on vacation.
Both our wives listen, Ross. You're poisoning the water for us when we get this front page story, man.
Hey, well, Ross, it's funny. I was gonna save it for next week, but having met Seth's wife, I can't believe for a second that she's still with him. So, Seth, you should absolutely, absolutely do this.
I know. She's a saint. I think part of it, all of my flaws are the reason I am with her. She's one of these people that likes to fix things. It was a long, arduous process, and she's halfway done.
I got a great idea. What if your wife got a story from myfrontpagestory.com for you for Valentine's Day, and the headline was, why I'm still with this meathead.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah, Ross has got to go, Sean. We've already kept him on.
Yeah, no. Well, we got to get my front page.
Hey, I'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, Ross, are you going to join us live on Radio Row? Are we doing it over the phone? Do we know yet? We'll see you.
I don't know yet. So my recording window for the Ross Tucker podcast is noon to 2 Eastern, 11 to 1.
Gotcha.
So coming over 4 hours early,
yeah,
to see you guys in person for the thing I do on the phone every week sounds like something like a that sounds like a move like a Seth would do. Not a great
use of time, probably. Yeah. All right. Well, good. Well, either way, we're talking next week, and we get to break down the Super Bowl with you. So we're super excited about that, man. Appreciate you, Ross.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Take it easy, Ross Tucker. He'll join us next Tuesday in New Orleans.
I was just joking about him having to go. That was just me.
7:15 is usually about the time. Yeah, no.
You look like you got super serious when I said that. I was just.
I was just
having fun with him.
No, I was looking up at the clock.
Trying to get him off of me. Yeah, I was trying to use the clock to get him off.
He was piling on there at the very end. Good stuff from Ross Tucker. You know, it's interesting when he was talking about the O-line for the Texans. You know, for any team that's going through offensive struggles, and I think a lot of people would go, you take a step back, you go, well, you know, you got to get a good OC and a good O-line coach, and you got to invest in the offensive line. The Texans have invested in the offensive line. That is the big thing. They got to get that right. Whoever the OC is, I'm assuming, is going to have a huge say in who the O-line coach is, if not full say in who the O-line coach is. They've got to get a group that gets through to the major pieces in this. I don't think all the pieces are going to be back. I think Shaq Mason is expendable. I think the young guys, they've got several young players and may add more to the mix depending on how the draft goes. I think there's going to be a lot of competition at those spots. But they got to get this O-line. I think Ross is spot on, man. You get the O-line it trickles down to CJ for sure.
My old thought on it, and kind of just the when I want to stick my finger in the air and see which way the wind blows, when I see offensive linemen who I know aren't dumb players doing really dumb things, I put pressure back on the coach. There's something that's being lost either in the teaching, the coaching of it, or sometimes schematically what you're asking them to do is just either really difficult or impossible. And that's where when I asked Ross about that, the disputes between offensive line coaches and offensive coordinators sometimes. The offensive coordinators, sometimes they've got dreams of glory and wanting to be the next Bill Walsh and everything, but they genuinely understand very little about the way the offensive line operates. Yeah. And that's where I do think, with Ross talking about how he wishes more offensive line coaches would become coordinators and head coaches, I think it's because people get so enamored of the passing game that they think they need a passing game coordinator like Bobby Slowick without realizing that without that foundation, it's like hiring a really good roofer to put a really nice roof on a house that's got termites. It's not going to last. The roof does nothing for you when you've got termites on the foundation. And that's what the Texans felt like this year. Yeah. There's only so much you can do when the pass protection and the run blocking isn't right.
Yeah, that's an interesting notion about more O-line coaches being offensive coordinators, especially centers, because they're kind of the brains of the operation calling out.
That'd be like the catcher becoming a manager.
It's exactly what I was thinking of. What I was thinking of, Seth, that cross-sport comparison to the catcher.
Yeah.
Catchers making good managers, for sure. That is a little surprising to me.
I think there are a lot of offensive linemen that understand the passing concepts really well, whereas I think there are very, very few wide receivers that understand blocking schemes really well.
Yeah.
I think from the offensive line, you got to understand the whole deal and what you're trying to do and all of that. And it is, I brought up Andy Reid because he's the perfect example of how sometimes you just ignore the thing that's right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, wow. And look at this team. Look at how well they operate on offense. Wow, it's amazing. Yeah, he started off his first 10 years in his career as an offensive line coach. He gets it.
Yeah.
He understands the total and complete picture.
Yep. We're getting some text messages. This goes back to headlines where we mentioned that the Texans have a new team president. Mike Toman is his name, and he comes from an extensive stadium background. So I think it's fairly easy to connect the dots that whoever the team president was going to be was going to have some sort of stadium background, given the age and the need, even if it's not a new stadium, the need for at least the very least repairs and renovations of NRG mm-hmm. Stadium, which will cost billions of dollars.
Are we going to put a retractable roof over the retractable roof?
That would be fun.
That's what I would go for.
Two-ply retractable roof.
Because then they could say the roof is
first
open
ever.
Even when it's not.
That's right.
So that roof's open today.
That's it. One of them is the
shell roof up on top.
That's it.
A pavilion.
The text message, the only reason I'd be excited about a new stadium is if they got rid of the Astrodome to do it. I think they would. What are you going to do? Like, you have to knock down one of them if you're putting it on that same plot of land. You can't have three stadiums.
No, yes, you can.
Like
you tell a Texan you can't do something.
That's true.
We'll build four stadiums on that. We're going to build a new NRG stadium on top of the old Astrodome.
Our great
going to be up on stilts so the next big flood won't harm us whatsoever.
Oh, an homage to Galveston. Yes, we're going to build the next stadium on stilts.
They build a replica of the Astrodome completely. The new stadium is an exact replica of the Astrodome.
Just start stacking them on top of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those little babushka dolls.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one inside the other. That'd be sweet. Rockets text message. Rockets have one of the best records in the NBA, yet they're 15th on the odds to win the championship. Bookmakers suck. Don't blame the bookmakers. Blame the
Take
market.
Take advantage of the bookmakers.
Yeah, man. If you think that there's such a value, go out there and empty your savings account to go bet on the Rockets, and then the line will move. If you think it's such an insult, that they're 40-1 or whatever they are to win the NBA championship. There may be some value. Now, futures bets inherently are bad value. Like, they're just not good bets. They're fun to have. It's like buying a lottery ticket.
They're like the futures bets. That's one where you feel they're manipulating the public a little bit and just saying, oh, that sounds awful. I'm going to jump on the Rockets one, and it still ends up working out.
I think the biggest reason for that, Texter, is that winning an NBA championship requires you to win multiple seven-game series. And the Rockets have proven thus far that they can beat these teams in one-offs during the regular season, you know, which is that's different because teams come in maybe on a back-to-back or they've got different things going on. A seven-game series, which I think is going to help the Rockets, actually, but a seven-game series is when coaching moves and the chess game come into play, game to game, adjusting to matchups, all that stuff. I think Ime Udoka is going to be really good at that. He got the Celtics to the NBA Finals, but we just don't know what this young core looks like in that sort of environment.
And the sad truth, in fact, of the matter is, too, that the Rockets play their butts off and they're scrappy defensively, and a lot of times they're going against teams that don't have as scrappy a mentality, where all of a sudden in the playoffs they get scrappier.
Yeah.
And you'd love to think, like, nah, you can't just turn it on and off. Like,
right.
All it takes is a couple of the world's best athletes turning it up a notch, and it changes a little bit. So I can see where the skepticism is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would encourage you to prove the haters wrong, damn it.
Yeah, they're not a great shooting team. They're an awful free throw shooting team, which really comes into play in some of these close games.
Overrated.
Yeah, yeah. So,
how many free throws do you get a game? Two, three, what?
What are they?
I would never know, having watched the Rockets for the past James Harden era.
James Harden,
how many free throws there can be in a game?
A game. It's interesting. Someone said, "I bet Udoka liked that win in Boston because he used to coach there and got fired by them." Obviously,
probably sent flowers to
He was asked about that in the post game. I mean, he had the right answer to it. He's like, I kind of did this already. You know, it's the second year I've been here. I've played the Celtics a few times already.
Yeah, been there, done there, done that. I don't mess with these hoes no more. That's what I would have said.
That's it. Yeah, I know you would have. For sure you would have. So, yesterday in Jacksonville, you know, my biggest fear, Seth, was inside the AFC South, was Jacksonville getting it right with their head coaching hire. Mm-hmm. Finding somebody who was going to get the most out of Trevor Lawrence. You know, unlock the Trevor Lawrence that we saw for a total of like 10 games in his career that got him $275 million.
Yeah.
And Liam Cohen...
They're a little bit in the Daniel Jones scenario now.
Yeah.
You've paid your guy, but you're really not quite sure about it.
Yes.
And let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So maybe they can bring in a Saquon Barkley.
He's a more pedigreed Daniel Jones. So they introduced Liam Cohen yesterday, who they bent over backwards to get this guy as their head coach. They fired the GM. If you read Albert Breer's story about this, man, the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least in that story, allegedly did some things to circumvent the Rooney, not circumvent the Rooney rule, but try to at least check the boxes in the Rooney rule.
Like, they had to, one of the reasons the hiring may have been delayed was that they hadn't completed their Rooney rule interviews, which is, mind you, this is, by that time, we're talking mid-January.
Yeah.
And they've known that they need a new coach for a long time.
Yeah.
All you have to do is interview some candidates via Zoom, and they're like, they haven't checked off that box. Like, even if they're doing it perfunctorily, it just, I can see why this organization had $22 million embezzled from them without
from
them knowing it. They're just not paying attention. I feel like Shohei Ohtani is running their books.
They
have no idea what's going on with their money or what they're supposed to do administratively.
They'd interviewed Robert Saleh, who is a minority, so he qualifies as an interview under the Rooney Rule. So they interviewed him. And then they had an interview scheduled with Patrick Graham, the now former defensive coordinator of the Raiders, for Thursday morning. Liam Cohen's in the building, back in the building after they fired Trent Baalke on Wednesday, knowing full well he's getting the job, but everybody's got to keep it hush-hush so they can do this interview with Patrick Graham so they're not circumventing the Rooney Rule, which they kind of are circumventing it. They're doing a token interview.
So they're not violating.
They're not the violating
rule.
Is the word I'm looking for. Violating the Rooney Rule, yes. So they end up hiring Liam Cohen, and they introduce him yesterday. And I've not known much about Liam Cohen, except he had a very strange career arc where he was in at college, like small colleges for a long time. He played at UMass. He coached at Maine. Never really coached at a collegiate powerhouse, but found his way onto the Rams staff around 2018 or 2019, and then went from there to Kentucky for a year as the OC, back to the Rams for a year, back to Kentucky for a year, and then to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as their OC last year. And granted, he did some really good things with Baker Mayfield this year. Baker had a huge year on his watch this year.
And Baker Mayfield, I think maybe twice now we've seen with Baker Mayfield, guys get head coaching jobs based on the work they did with Baker Mayfield without Baker Mayfield himself getting any acknowledgement whatsoever. I'm getting offended on behalf of Baker Mayfield. You know, the fact of the matter is, I think Baker Mayfield he's probably just fine as a quarterback. I don't know. He still throws a bunch of interceptions. But before he got injured in Cleveland, he was doing just fine there as well. So I think that might be the dynamic, and I'm happy for it because a divisional opponent hired a guy based on the work he did with Baker Mayfield, who had already looked pretty good the year before with a different offensive coordinator.
Yeah, yeah. So in comes Cohen, and again, my biggest fear was – in the AFC South is someone that's going to get Trevor Lawrence right. Here was Cohen talking about it's going to be all about Trevor Lawrence.
How do we make Trevor Lawrence in this offense as dynamic and explosive as we can be? Right? We've got to build it around him as well, right? We've got to make every part of this about improvement. And he will be a part of that process. He's earned that right. I cannot respect his toughness and mentality and work ethic more than I do already from afar, and this will all be about Trevor right now.
Okay, that's the right answer. I mean, they got no choice. I mean, they paid him, you know?
Yeah. And I guess the follow-up question should have been, hey, are you going to draft a running back in the first round twice like the last GM did to try to help and support him? Because please tell me that's not your plan. What did they do? What was the big one? Oh, Leonard Fournette with the number 4 overall pick. That was more egregious than the ETN one, because at least ETN was a late first round.
Yeah, pick. And Fournette was a few years before Trevor as well. But ETN, they drafted him in the same first round, the same draft as Trevor Lawrence. Okay, so now let's judge Cohen on a couple of other things here. So he says you got to build around Trevor. Okay, he says that the Jags are going to operate fast, which makes sense. You want your team to be fast, but he's using FAST as an acronym, kind of like SWARM, that he lays out here. Let's do the battle of the acronyms in the AFC South here.
Okay.
It takes complementary football at all three phases to be great. Offense, defense, and special teams. How do we want to play the game? And that's FAST. Fundamentally sound, attacking, situational masters, and tough, both mentally and physically. You see players in the room right here, guys that I've had conversations with already. It will always be about you. Always. It is players over plays. How do we make this as much about the players and making this about bringing out the best in you? That's what this is about.
All right. The problem with that acronym was that he had a better catchphrase at the end of it, players over plays.
That's a good one,
Yeah, that's really good. And honestly, that coming from an offensive coordinator, that's actually a good thing that you want to hear, because we've talked about all the whiteboard warriors for, you know, and how guys sometimes get too wrapped up in having their special playbook, like Henry Winkler, clutched against their chest, than they do about actually executing the plays.
Yeah.
Fundamentally sound, attacking, situational masters, and tough.
That's fast.
For one, kind of like SWARM, I don't like acronyms that exclude one of the words from the phrase. It just doesn't feel right and pure. So that's like SWARM should be SWIRM, but you're only getting rid of one word.
Right.
Fundamentally sound, attacking, situational masters, tough. He doesn't put and after the masters. So really they're excluding three words in that. So I can't abide. That's a horrible acronym.
His acronym should be FSASMT.
Phasasmata.
Like, at least SWARM is just SWIRM, special work ethic and relentless mindset, you know?
Phasasmat. It would be phasasmat.
Phasasmat. Yeah, if you put the and in there, phasasmat.
Plus, special work ethic and relentless mindset.
Yeah.
That's it's a little bit at beginning to remember it, but it's a phrase that flows if you have to explain the acronym. Like, I don't know how many players are going to have to sit down and remember this along with their college fight song so they can recite it when they're getting hazed as rookies. Yeah. Fundamentally sound, attacking, situational masters, and tough. No. It's a crap acronym.
Okay, good.
Can't go anywhere with that.
All right, so we're winning the acronym war in the AFC South. All right, now here's where he got a lot of attention on social media yesterday. We know that the Jags fans have a chant, Duval, right, for Duval County. You played there. Does this go back to...
It's a lot catchier than St. John's.
Right.
St. John's County is just south.
Yeah. Duval.
That's where, like, Ponte Vedra, the Champions courses and everything.
Gotcha. So Duval really pops, right? It's got that ooh sound in it. Here's what... Ben, just pick the first one. Here's what it's supposed to sound like. Here's what it sounded like from Liam Cohen.
Duval. Duval.
Shut up.
Again.
Shut up.
Again. Here's what it's been hit to here. Here's what it's supposed to sound like.
Duval.
Here's how Liam Cohen says it.
Duval.
Look, he's selling toilet paper. What the hell is that?
One more. Here's how it's supposed to sound.
Duval.
And now it's Liam Cohen.
Duval.
Right, this is something
that at the press conference?
Yes, at the very beginning.
Okay, I watched one. This is what I had seen. I thought you were going to play the one. I saw one that didn't sound that bad, but then I realized they did, the social media team did one of him saying it, but they added... The crowd saying it and applause afterwards. It was like when a really bad pop singer has awesome backup singers and they mute her track. Yeah.
I saw that one too. He got better at it. That was a better one. This was one he led into the press conference by going, Jacksonville, Jaguars, or something like that. And then he just goes,
Duval.
Yeah, and people are like stunned. Like, this is a chant that's so easy. Listen, even a baby can do it better than Liam Cohen.
Can you say Duval?
Duval.
And then here's him.
Yeah,
and here's
Duval.
Him.
Duval.
He, like, a baby knows how to do it.
We gotta have Texans fans do it that way. Where if the Texans, as the Texans are winning in a game at NRG Stadium, we have to have the Texans fans going, Duval!
Duval!
We could play it over the PA.
We could
play it over the sound system.
He needs to be taunted with this janky ass. Dude, here's how it's really supposed to sound. This is the DJ. DJ Eazy-E in Jacksonville is the one who invented this chant in a story that I saw yesterday on YouTube. Yeah. I saw this back in the late 90s. I mean, that doesn't sound anything. Like, Liam.
Duval.
I mean, that's you can't have opposite.
That's actually worse than Herm Edwards not understanding the Devil's Pitchfork.
Oh, at Arizona State.
When he took the job at Arizona State, he didn't know what the logo was.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty bad. But
Duval. Dude, the tweets were hilarious. They were retweeting that clip, people were like, 0-17.
Yeah.
I retweeted and said they should have kept Balky.
When are we playing all the other bad opening press conferences?
A little later. Probably okay. 8 o'clock hour sometime, I think. Yeah, so we'll...
Because that's not always an accurate indicator. Some of the most horrendous opening press conferences, Dan Campbell and Nick Sirianni, notably. Those guys have worked out pretty well.
And I'm willing to acknowledge that, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, you want to head to Vegas? You can win the Slam Dunk trip to Vegas by tuning in to Sports Radio 610 for an hour a day on the Odyssey app. Live, rewind, or show podcast, doesn't matter. Just listen to Sports Radio 610 or any participating station on the Odyssey app for 60 minutes to earn your daily entry. Then you and three friends could be wheels up to Vegas in March. Fun trip. Extra $5K in each of your pockets for the ultimate college basketball tournament experience. I know where that $5K would be going for me in Vegas. Just log in and listen now on the Odyssey app for your chance to win this national contest. Howie Long said on the post-game show, on the studio show for the NFC title game, that there are five teams that wouldn't trade their quarterback for Jaden Daniels. Did the Texans make the cut? And one team that did make the cut, I'm wondering if Howie Long watches AFC playoff football. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Here was Howie Long. Howie Long, of course, part of the Fox Studio Show. Longtime member of the Fox Studio Show and Hall of Fame defensive lineman for the Raiders back in the day. Saying that there are five teams, just five, that would not trade their quarterback for Jaden Daniels.
I think there are five teams, if people around the league are being honest, that would not trade their quarterback right now for Jaden Daniels. Buffalo, Baltimore, Cincinnati, and the Chargers.
Buffalo, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Kansas City, and the Chargers. Seth, so my take on that, I don't mind Howie Long not having Houston in there. I would disagree. I would keep. I like C.J. Stroud. I'm roll with C.J. Stroud, but I'm not mad about it. I understand the narrative behind the year C.J. just had. My question would be, Justin, did you watch Justin Herbert in the one really important game he played in this year?
I don't recall Justin Herbert this year, nor in his previous time in the playoffs, doing a damn thing in the playoffs.
I don't get this Justin Herbert fascination with people. He's good. He's very talented, but he's played in two playoff games in five seasons.
Mm-hmm.
In one, he was part of an historic choke job that they coughed up a 27-0 lead to Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars. And in the other one, he threw four interceptions and looked awful against the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. I would if he had left it at four and C.J. Stroud wasn't in there, I'd be like, whatever. What do you argue with those guys? But I do think, as far as whether it had been C.J. Stroud or Justin Herbert or not, I do think that, like we all do, you know, and I succumbed to it last year. You plot out this nice even line of upward ascension every single year. And a promising, we've seen more times than not over the last decade or so, a really promising rookie season ends up being, if not like even just disappointing the next year, or it gets to be a complete illusion, like with RG3. It's just that they don't come anywhere close to what they look like they could be in their rookie year. So, I'm offended with or without Justin Herbert in that equation. That's because CJ has already shown that his ceiling is very high. And he did it in a way that a lot of those other quarterbacks that have had promising rookie years, including Jaden Daniels, their athleticism is a huge part of it. Where with CJ, his athleticism was a very small part of it.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm offended, Howie Long. Deeply offended.
His athleticism was a very small part of it, and yet it seems like CJ kind of almost realized there was a side to him that he didn't know existed in the last couple playoff games, where he actually, I'm not saying he's going to turn into Lamar Jackson or Jaden Daniels or anything like that, but he was more willing to extend drives and move the chains by using his legs.
I think the one thing about that is that CJ knows he can run, and I think he's also, though, been trying to really learn and become an elite quarterback, which is predicated still, even if you're a quarterback who can run, it's your ability to dice people up from the pocket that really matters. And I think that there are two things with that. One is that's where he's trying to do the hard part, which is being a pure passer and maybe hesitant to run at times. But two, this is where the offensive coordinator comes in. If you look at Dak Prescott a couple years ago when Mike McCarthy took over play calling, so Mike McCarthy hadn't been the play caller before that, they got back to the old principles of go exhaust your reads and then you run. And it's as simple as that. And you use it, like it, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be as structured these days, but for Dak Prescott, that was what he needed at that point, is just give me the answers to the test. All right, I've got through my reads, run. Don't think about it. Don't try to make something. Don't try to wait for a play to extend or what have you. And I think that's where a different offensive coordinator might really help CJ get the most out of that part of his game.
Yeah. Does CJ's performance in the playoffs give you encouragement that the CJ from 2023, like, is, you know, I don't want to say is still in there. It's not like he was awful, terrible throughout the year. But he looked a lot more, to me, looked a lot more like his old self in those two playoff games.
Yeah, and I mean, that my long-term optimism about CJ is the same, really, that it's been. I think ultimately this is going to be a good year for him to have endured. But when you watch the Chiefs game and some of the other games versus good opponents this year, where things look pretty good in the through the third quarter, and then all of a sudden everything fell apart offensively. A lot of it centered around pass protection and what they could or couldn't do with it. The Chiefs game, I mean, it's almost unfair because you saw Josh Allen have the same issues with the Chiefs that C.J. Stroud did at the end of the game, which is you can slide the protection whichever way you want. The Chiefs, by the end of the game, the Chiefs have the offensive line and the quarterback and the offensive coordinator completely screwed up.
Yeah.
As to how to anticipate the blitz. They show certain looks where they don't blitz or they blitz from the other side. Then in the fourth quarter, they show the exact same blitz and they bring the blitz from the other side. You can slide your protection all you want. Those higher level defenses, a lot of times, have the ability to also change their blitz based on you sliding the protection. Once they hear that you check the protection, they know why you check the protection, and they bring a different blitz. It's really, really hard. But with the Texans, it really collapsed. Okay. I mean, they gave up 5 sacks in the fourth quarter. In a couple of those, I think CJ, you could see that it had affected him. He pulled the ball down quick. He looked like he was starting to panic. And that's where having a different offensive coordinator that hopefully can just unlock that next element of both the offensive line play and then CJ's ability to check and make adjustments pre-snap, all of that. You hope you get somebody that can give him more tools in his toolkit for that.
Yep. Should I pender poll this one? Like, for Texan fans, would you trade CJ Stroud for James Daniels?
I think it'll be just, you might just do it for engagement, because I would predict that it's going to be 90% no. Most of your followers are Texas fans, Texans, and
that's interesting. Because there were, I mean, I'm just going by, again, we're purely talking a Twitter poll here, so I'm going by the feedback I've seen about CJ on Twitter all year. I think it would definitely be a majority. I think you're right about that. 90-10, that's interesting. I may do that now just to see how accurate you are on that. Jane Daniels was really, really good this year.
He was really, really good, but it's also you're dealing with a local fan base that has not emotionally abandoned CJ at all.
Yep.
So there's people that are questioning or have skepticism, but I think when push comes to shove, when it really matters, Sean, when you're clicking a button on a Twitter poll, that's where the true colors
that's
come
out. That's nut-cutting time, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, people are weighing in on Liam Cohen on the text page. Someone says that sounds a bit like the sounds from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Duval.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I don't remember what that sound was.
That was so Close Encounters of the Third Kind was.
Oh, that
Duval.
One.
Duval.
A little bit, maybe, yeah.
Because the aliens had discovered synthesizers.
Well, and that's a second
big
person.
In the 80s.
A second person says sounds like somebody talking like an alien.
Duval.
Okay. Oh, or like an alien that's trying to pose as a human?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, an alien that comes to Earth and hasn't quite gotten it all figured out yet. Yeah.
Duval.
Someone says,
something
I'm actually
off about this Silicon Valley employee.
Yes, yeah. Y'all going to have me saying that all day at work today. Okay, well, let's keep
doing it. Duval.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're up against, people.
I got to get the pitch down right. Do it one more time, Ben.
Duval.
And then it kind of comes down at the end.
And then in the press conference, if you could see it, he gives this little schoolboyish type smile, like, I done good, right? I done good, right, teacher?
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a
school child who thought he was supposed to kill all the lab mice when he was actually supposed to try to keep them alive as long as possible. The biology teacher walks in and there's mouse carcasses everywhere.
I watched that's a visual. I watched a lot of the I didn't watch the whole press conference of Liam Cohen, but I watched a lot of the chunks of it, and I watched a lot of the Jags in-house content of him walking into the building, interacting with employees. A lot of that made it on there. And man, like, I'm always amazed. Like, Shad Khan is obviously a very, very, very successful businessman. He owns an NFL team. But like, for him to get snowed by Trent Baalke for this long, and I didn't know anything about Liam Cohen. I didn't know what his voice sounded like until all these clips popped up yesterday. I only knew that he had a good year as the OC in Tampa Bay last year, and somehow he's been at Kentucky twice in the last 4 years. Yeah. That's all I really knew about him. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, holy crap, this is the guy this is a guy you were willing to violate Rooney rules for and treated like he was Vince Lombardi in the process.
I'm gonna tell you something about being an NFL coach and why a lot of the old school things like physical presence matter and confidence. And this is something that they don't write in the handbook or what have you. But to be an NFL coach, you've got to be willing to stand toe-to-toe with a 310-pound man that's threatening to kick your ass and not show fear. Like, there is an element of physical toughness that you have to be able to present. And if not that, then you have to be somebody that's either, you kind of have a dignified air about you or whatever. You don't have to be able to intimidate that 310-pound man, but you can't. It's like schoolyard rules. Like, you gotta show that you're not scared of guys that sometimes actually have more security in the organization than you do. And there is something that still matters about just being a leader of men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why with the coaches, I do the podium body language does matter. I think the delivery matters. I think there's a certain element that you have to have. And sometimes you can tell whether a coach has it or does not have it. You know, like Gary Kubiak, as laid back as can be, but he's also got that little bit of Texas toughness to him.
Sure.
You know, you can just tell. He's not somebody that's gonna be frightened of you if you threaten to kick his ass.
Nope.
I don't know. I feel like Liam Cohen would go, I think he'd go running and hiding in the showers if he felt like there was danger. I don't know.
It's gonna be interesting, man. All right.
I think that was Nick Saban actually that said something about that in an interview. I'll have to track that down.
That sounds about right.
You know, Saban's a little guy too, yeah. But was a DB's coach back with the Oilers back in the day, yeah. and you got to learn that you can't back down from guys that might try to bully you.
You have a few minutes to get petty. Are you ready for the petty cast this week?
Oh yeah,
8 o'clock Tuesday.
I don't have to get ready. I stay ready.
You stay petty
24/7.
Petty That's ready, right. baby. All right, so we're gonna do the petty cast. There's some good petty stuff coming out of these AFC and NFC title games that we're going to get to. And text in yours, 713-572-4610. What are you feeling petty about? We'll talk about that coming up next.